Chapter 14. One green light, squinting over Kid's Creek, which is near the mouth of the Pirate River, marked where the brig lay, low in the water. The Jolly Roger. A rakish-looking craft, foul to the hull, every beam in her detestable, like ground strewn with mangled feathers. She was the cannibal of the seas, and scarce needed that watchful eye, for she floated immune in the horror of her name. She was wrapped in the blanket of night, through which no sound from her could have reached the shore. There was little sound, and none agreeable, save the whir of the ship's sewing machine at which Smee sat, ever industrious and obliging, the essence of the commonplace, pathetic Smee. I know not why he was so infinitely pathetic, unless it were because he was so pathetically unaware of it. But even strong men had to turn hastily from looking at him, and more than once on summer evenings had he touched the fount of Hook's tears and made it flow. Of this, as of almost everything else, Smee was quite unconscious. A few of the pirates leant over the bulwarks, drinking in the miasma of the night. Others sprawled by barrels over games of dice and cards, and the exhausted four who had carried the little house lay prone on the deck, where even in their sleep they rolled skillfully to this side or that, out of Hook's reach, lest he should claw them mechanically in passing. Hook trod the deck in thought. Oh, man unfathomable! It was his hour of triumph. Peter had been removed forever from his path, and all the other boys were in the brig, about to walk the plank. It was his grimmest deed since the days when he had brought Barbecue to heel. And knowing as we do how vain a tabernacle is man, could we be surprised had he now paced the deck unsteadily, bellied out by the winds of his success? But there was no elation in his gait, which kept pace with the action of his somber mind.
Tomorrow, and tomorrow, and tomorrow, creeps in this petty pace from day to day. And the cuckoo's sovereign cry fills all the hollow of the sky. Who would go parading in London, masquerading on such a night of June with that beautiful soft half-moon and all these innocent blisses on such a night as this is? What a night of stars! Good old glitterers, I dare say they are in the know.
Hook was profoundly dejected. He was often thus when communing with himself on board ship in the quietude of the night.
A feeling of sadness and longing that is not akin to pain and resembles sorrow only as the mist resembles the rain. Oh, nightingale, never, never grudge thy song to those who love to hear its echoes, serenading, ever fading, the only ghost he knows.
It was because he was so terribly alone. This inscrutable man never felt more alone than when surrounded by his dogs. They were socially inferior to him. Hook was not his true name. to reveal who he really was would even at this date set the country in a blaze. But as those who read between the lines must already have guessed, he had been at a famous public school, and its traditions still clung to him like garments, with which indeed they are largely concerned. Thus, it was offensive to him even now to board a ship in the same dress in which he grappled her, and he still adhered in his walk to the school's distinguished slouch. But above all, he retained the passion for good form. Good form! However much he may have degenerated, he still knew that this is all that really matters. From far within him, he heard a creaking as of rusty portals, and through them came a stern tap, tap, tap. Like hammering in the night when one cannot sleep.
Abhorred shade! I know not what manner of man thou art in the flesh, sir, but figure thee bearded and black of eyes, and of a lean, tortuous habit of body that moves ever with a swish. Thou devastator of the gardens, I know thee, Pilkington!
Have you been good form today? Was their eternal question.
Fame, fame, that glittering bauble, it is mine. Blame not the bard if he fly to the bowers where pleasure lies, carelessly smiling at fame. He was born for much more, and in happier hours his soul might have burned with a holier flame.
The tap, tap from his school replied, Is it quite good form to be distinguished at anything?
I am the only man whom Barbecue feared, and Flint feared Barbecue.
Barbecue? Flint? What house? Most disquieting reflection of all. Was it not bad form to think about good form? His vitals were tortured by this problem. It was a claw within him sharper than the iron one. And as it tore him, the perspiration dripped down his tallow countenance and streaked his doublet. Oft times he drew his sleeve across his face, but there was no damning that trickle. Ah, envy not Hook. There came to him a presentiment of his early dissolution. It was as if Peter's terrible oath had boarded the ship. Hook felt a gloomy desire to make his dying speech, lest presently there should be no time for it.
Out, brief candle. Out. Life's but a walking shadow. And the birds sing, and the bells peal. For death. Happy. Dusty death. Selaclef. Better for Hook if he had had less ambition.
It was in his darkest hours only that he referred to himself in the third person.
No little children love me.
Strange that he should think of this, which had never troubled him before. Perhaps the sewing machine brought it to his mind. For long he muttered to himself, staring at Smee, who was hemming placidly under the conviction that all children feared him. Feared him. Feared Smee.
Ha! You fool.
There was not a child on board the brig that night who did not already love him. He had said horrid things to them and hit them with the palm of his hand, because he could not hit with his fist, but they had only clung to him the more. Michael had tried on his spectacles. To tell poor Smee that they thought him lovable? Hawk itched to do it, but it seemed too brutal. Instead, he revolved this mystery in his mind. Why do they find Smee lovable? He pursued the problem like the sleuth hound that he was. If Smee was lovable, what was it that made him so? A terrible answer suddenly presented itself. Good form? Had the bosun good form without knowing it? Which is the best form of all. He remembered that you have to prove you don't know you have it before you are eligible for pop. With a cry of rage, he raised his iron hand over Smee's head. But he did not tear. What arrested him was this reflection.
To claw a man because he has good form, what would that be?
Bad form.
Bad form.
The unhappy Hook was as impuissant as he was damp, and he fell forward like a cut flower.
Yo-ho, yo-ho, the frisky plank,
he
walks along it so, till it goes down and you goes down to Davy Jones below. Yo-ho,
right, which one of you bilge-sucking sea rats used my good tailor scissors to cut your flaming toenails?
His dogs, thinking him out of the way for a time, discipline instantly relaxed, and they broke into a bacchanalian dance. This brought him to his feet at once, all traces of human weakness gone, as if a bucket of water had passed over him.
Quiet, you dogs, or I'll cast anger in you. Are all the children chained so they cannot fly away?
Aye, Captain.
Then hoist them up.
The wretched prisoners were dragged from the hold, all except Wendy, and ranged in line in front of him. For a time he seemed unconscious of their presence. He lolled at his ease, humming, not unmelodiously, snatches of a rude song, and fingering a pack of cards. Ever and anon, the light from his cigar gave a touch of color to his face.
Now then, six of you walk the plank tonight, but I have room for two cabin boys. Which of you is it to be?
Don't irritate him unnecessarily, boys.
That had been Wendy's instructions in the hold. So Tootles stepped forward politely. Tootles hated the idea of signing under such a man, but an instinct told him that it would be prudent to lay the responsibility on an absent person. And though a somewhat silly boy, he knew that mothers alone are always willing to be the buffer. All children know this about mothers, and despise them for it, but make constant use of it. So Tootles explained prudently.
You see, sir, I don't think my mother would like me to be a pirate. Would your mother like you to be a pirate, Slightly?
He winked at Slightly, who said mournfully,
I don't think so. Would your mother like you to be a pirate, Twin?
I don't think so. Nibs, would
you... Stow this gab!
The spokesmen were dragged back. Hook's eyes fell on John, who was standing tall and proud.
You, boy, you look as if you had a little pluck in you. Didst never want to be a pirate, my heart?
Now, John had sometimes experienced this hankering at maths prep. and he was struck by Hook's picking him out.
I once thought of calling myself Red-Handed Jack.
Aye, and a good name too. What do you think, Smee?
Aye, Captain. A wickedly fearsome name indeed.
Oh, we'll call you that here, Red-Handed Jack. If you join...
What do you think, Michael?
What would you call me if I join?
Blackbeard Joe.
Michael was naturally impressed.
I say, that does have a nice ring to it. Although, I think a beard would be awfully itchy. What do you think, John?
He wanted John to decide. And John wanted him to decide.
Shall we still be respectful subjects of the king?
Through Hook's teeth came the answer.
You would have to swear down with the king.
Down, Mr. King!
Down with the king!
Perhaps John had not behaved very well so far, but he shone out now.
Then I refuse.
And I refuse. Rule Britannia.
Their hater.
Mutiny will bring plague over her bitter.
I'd rather dance with Jack.
Sink me with a clap of thunder.
Blow the man down.
The infuriated pirates buffeted them in the mouth, and Hook roared out.
That seals your doom. Bring up their mother.
Aye, Captain.
Aye, aye.
Get the plank ready.
Aye, aye.
They were only boys, and they went white as they saw Jukes and Checo preparing the fatal plank.
We're to feed the fish tonight, lads.
Shark bait.
The boys tried to look brave when Wendy was brought up. No words of mine can tell you how Wendy despised those pirates.
Now, boys, chins up. There is a far better adventure on the horizon for you than to become a pirate on this filthy vessel.
To the boys, there was at least some glamour in the pirate calling. But all that Wendy saw was that the ship had not been tidied for years. There was not a porthole on the grimy glass of which you might not have written with your finger, "Wash me!" And she had already written it on several. But as the boys gathered round her, she had no thought, of course, save for them.
So, my beauty, are you to see your children walk the plank?
Fine gentleman though he was, the intensity of his communings had soiled his ruff. And suddenly he knew that she was gazing at it. With a hasty gesture, he tried to hide it, but he was too late.
Are they to die?
She asked with a look of such frightful contempt that Hook nearly fainted.
They are.
Scupper
just
on.
Just in time for coup de supper.
Die like the rats. They are. Oh, messmate. Too soon. Whiskers just died.
Scurry would have called him. We mice.
Dead men tell no tales.
Silence all. For a mother's last words to her children.
At this moment, Wendy was grand.
These are my last words, dear boys. I feel that I have a message to you from your real mothers, and it is this. We hope our sons will die like English gentlemen.
Even the pirates were awed. Gentleman Starkey burst into tears.
Oh, were it my mother ever said that to me?
How can you
that was beautiful, that was.
Gentlemen.
Godspeed.
Tootles was the first to cry out. How in the name of matriotism a timid boy can become a valiant man?
I'm going to do what my mother hopes. What are you going to do, Nibs?
What my mother hopes? What are you to do, twin?
What my mother hopes, of course. John, what
but
are
Hook
you...
But Hook had found his voice again.
Tie her up! Tie her up!
How did you do well?
It was Smee who tied her to the mast.
See here, lass. Shh. I'll save you. If you promise to be my mother.
But not even for Smee would she make such a promise.
I would almost rather have no children at all.
Well, that's a bit harsh.
It is sad to know that not a boy was looking at her as Smee tied her to the mast. The eyes of all were on the plank. That last little walk they were about to take. They were no longer able to hope that they would walk it manfully. They could stare and shiver only. Hook smiled on them with his teeth closed and took a step toward Wendy.
Pitiful mother. Why not take a final look upon your progeny? As they see their fate decided.
His intention was to turn her face so that she should see the boys walking the plank one by one. But he never reached her. He never heard the cry of anguish he hoped to wring from her. He heard something else instead. It was the terrible tick, tick of the crocodile. They all heard it. Pirates, boys, Wendy. And immediately every head was blown in one direction. Not to the water whence the sound proceeded, but toward Hook.
Captain.
All knew that what was about to happen concerned him alone, and that from being actors they were suddenly become spectators. Very frightful was it to see the change that came over him. It was as if he had been clipped at every joint. He fell in a little heap. The sound came steadily nearer, and in advance of it came this ghastly thought.
The crocodile is about to board the ship. The crocodile is about to board the ship. The crocodile is about to board the ship. The crocodile is about to board the ship.
Even the iron claw hung inactive, as if knowing that it was no intrinsic part of what the attacking force wanted. Left so fearfully alone, any other man would have lain with his eyes shut where he fell. But the gigantic brain of Hook was still working, and under its guidance, he crawled on the knees along the deck as far from the sound as he could go. The pirates respectfully cleared a passage for him. And it was only when he brought up against the bulwarks that he spoke again.
Hide me. Hide me.
Hide me.
They gathered round him, all eyes averted from the thing that was coming aboard. They had no thought of fighting it. It was fate. Only when Hook was hidden from them did curiosity loosen the limbs of the boys, so that they could rush to the ship's side to see the crocodile climbing it. Then they got the strangest surprise of the night of nights, for it was no crocodile that was coming to their aid. It was Peter! He signed to them to not give vent to any cry of admiration that might rouse suspicion. Then he went on ticking. Mm-hmm.